of the reasons the Bible rings true to me, and I suspect to many of you too, is because of the unflinching honesty with which it depicts relationships. Whether it's between rulers and the ruled, kings and prophets, parents and children, or siblings. No punches are pulled. Nothing is sugar-coated. Go right back to the beginning and the first family. Think about our brothers, Cain and Abel. There is a sibling relationship that did not end well. And indeed, siblings in particular seem to have problems throughout the Bible. For Cain and Abel are followed by tensions between Isaac and Ishmael, and Jacob and Esau. And then, of course, there's Joseph and his brothers, who are so put out with him that they throw him in a pit. They want to kill him. And then they show him mercy by only selling him into slavery. We can imagine the complicated dynamics that existed between Moses and Aaron and Miriam, between the sons of Solomon. You remember what happened to his kingdom? It split. And it continued throughout the ages. And the tensions continue in the New Testament, as we see in this morning's lesson from Luke. Here we have the sisters, Martha and Mary. And they appear twice in the Gospels, here in Luke and later in John. And John gives us a couple of details about these sisters that we don't have here. He tells us where they lived, a community called Bethany, which in Hebrew made Beit Ani, house of the poor. It was an impoverished place. And Jesus tells us there that they had a brother, Lazarus, who you will recall Jesus raised from the dead. But those details aren't present here in Luke. We have no reason to think that Luke was aware of these details as he shared the story. For him, it's just these two sisters welcoming Jesus into their home as he makes his final journey to Jerusalem. And at first, all seems well. Martha goes out and welcomes Jesus. And he comes into their home, and we could imagine that he's able to relax a little bit, kick up his feet. Martha heads off to the kitchen, starts to prepare dinner. And she notices somebody is missing. As she's fixing the meal, where's Mary? So she leaves the kitchen and goes back into the main room of the house and finds Mary is sitting at Jesus' feet. And Martha's put out. She has a fit. And she asks Jesus to tell off Mary. A little bit passive aggressive here. Doesn't talk to Mary herself. Instead, she asks her guest to do that. And Jesus, being Jesus, has a little bit of a surprise for Mary. He doesn't tell off. Excuse me, he has a surprise for Martha. He doesn't tell off Mary, but he tells off Martha. You're distracted. You've got too much going on. Take a look at your sister. She's focused on the one thing that matters. She's got the better part. Now, there have been many ways of interpreting this story over the years. One particular focus in recent decades has been on gender roles. And so there have been some scholars who focus on this and suggest that there is an anti-woman thrust going on here. That the church, speaking through the gospel, was saying that women should focus on passive roles. They can pray and study, but they shouldn't be engaged in active ministry. So Martha's being told to be quiet and to mind her place. A counter-argument has been that this is a liberating text. The fact that we don't hear about a brother here is important, because if Jesus is going into the home of some women, he's breaking a social taboo. A man wasn't supposed to go into the home of women unattended. And then not only does he do that, but when Mary sits at his feet, she's engaging in a particular activity. That meant that she was being a student and Jesus her teacher. The same phrase is used to describe Paul at the feet of Gamaliel. And Jesus accepting Mary as a student, as a disciple, is making a profound statement. In earlier centuries, the focus is more on the dichotomy between action and contemplation. And often people read the story and they think, well, clearly Mary is the one who's being praised, and so the life of prayer, the life of thought and reflection, is to be valued more highly than the life of action and activity. Yet if we draw that assumption, we're taking the story out of its larger context. Last week, we read the verses that immediately precede these. And you'll recall there was the lawyer who came to Jesus asking, "Who is my neighbor?" And Jesus responded with the story of the Good Samaritan. And he taught the lawyer to have a broad vision in seeing who your neighbor is, because God can come to us and build community in the most surprising ways, and we are called to action. So we have two stories together, one teaching about active ministries, another about reflective, contemplative ministries. So then what to do with this text? I think the key is to focus on the attitudes. Think about Martha and how she's acting here. Now, she's drawing on a very deep tradition that's central in her culture, this notion of hospitality. It goes right back to the founding of her community, as we read in Genesis. And Abraham is blessed by offering hospitality to travelers. So Martha's doing what she believes is the right thing. But think about how she's doing it. And perhaps to get a deeper understanding of how she's acting, consider, a Thanksgiving dinner or a cocktail party that you've been part of. Maybe you've been the guest or a helper or even the host or hostess. An event that is supposed to be about fun and fellowship and good times, instead is slowly but surely overtaken by the preparation. Having every T crossed, every I dotted. The turkey is going to be just right. The napkins are going to be here and not there. We're going to have all the decorations out and they must be here by this time. What do you mean you don't have the CDs in the CD player or the iPod loaded up? We need the music. Without it, the celebration's going to fall flat on its face. And so instead of a time of joy and relaxation, the event becomes a source of tension and stress. This happens because the party host has shifted his or her attention. You or I have shifted our attention from our guests and showing them a good time to the process and to what's going to help us achieve a sense of fulfillment. We're not focused on the thing that matters. This is the word of advice, the caution that Jesus is offering to Martha. He doesn't criticize her for working. He criticizes her for being distracted. And how easy it is for us to be distracted in this day and age as we're ever connected through our phones and computers and all of our competing demands on our time. Even the church, which is supposed to provide us with a way to come closer to God, can become a means of being distracted from God. As we worry about the service or the meeting or getting things done. Jesus says to Martha, and Jesus says to you and to me, get over yourself. It's not about you. Mary gets it. It's supposed to be about Jesus. It's supposed to be about God. All we are called to do is meant to draw us closer to God and to help us push away the distractions of the world, those things that draw us away from God. Sometimes we are called to be like Mary. Sometimes we are called to be like Martha. God has fashioned us in all of our wonderful diversity with our different temperaments and gifts and skills, and some are called to preach, and some are called to do pastoral care, and some are called to work with money, and some are called to work in the kitchen, and some are called to set up chairs, some are called to work with kids. The list goes on and on and on. But we are all called to get over ourselves, so we can get closer to God. God calls each of us to ministry in different ways at different times, speaking to each of us with our unique gifts. But he calls all of us to do this because he wants us to enter into his new creation, into his community of love and hope and resurrection and grace.